We are live. Hello, OCD family community. Wow, it's been a wild and a rough start to the new year here, just a week and a half in, particularly for our community in Southern California, as the wildfires and really dangerous high winds have devastated the area. But we know circumstances, crises, and devastation happens all over our global neighborhoods as well, whether from inclement weather, health issues, violence, war. So today's episode will focus mainly on the current needs in response to our fellow Los Angelinos. But for those of us outside of LA, I hope that there is still much that can be gleaned, and also maybe some strategies that we can brainstorm on how to help people that are in need. There's going to be a lot of need. There's already a lot of need, and it's going to be an ongoing effort. I have a stellar lineup of guests here with me. I'm so appreciative. So we're going to go ahead and roll into the intro so that we don't miss a single minute. I'm Nicole Morris, licensed marriage and family therapist and mental health correspondent. And let me be the first to say, welcome to the family, the OCD family, that is. I am here to create a community of support for family members, spouses, partners, parents, adult children, as there may be adult words, and chosen family of OCD sufferers and their community. I've had over 22 years of experience in the mental health field, but please note that this information does not qualify or substitute as a diagnostic evaluation, therapy, or treatment, and it is presented on an as-is basis. Please follow up with a qualified mental health provider in your area regarding concerns for yourself or loved ones. Thank you for joining us today. Now, let's get started. Alrighty. So, as I said, we have a stellar lineup of guests, and I don't want to waste anyone's time because we are just very fortunate to have the voices to speak into the current situation going on in California. And we are going to be starting off with really talking about what's number one across the board. We need to consider people's physical safety when there is a time of crisis. Number one, you need to make sure that you're safe and that you have access to your basic essential needs. And so we're going to be starting off by talking with Lauren Witkin. He is the chairman, CEO, and founder of Citadel with over 30 plus years of experience in the environmental health and safety industry. And while there are so many wonderful and impressive aspects to his resume, he has had a long day, a very long week, and you guys just had fires, I want to say 3 weeks ago. And so this is an ongoing time. People that have lived or worked and spent significant time in California know there is a fire season. And so we're going to go ahead and start off with Lauren so that he can get some much needed rest. And we will continue the conversation then with Michelle and Chris. You may notice Michelle there shares the same last name because they are married and we are super appreciative of their time together. So Lauren, I'm going to start with you. And would really love for you to help us understand some general guidelines regarding what we need to think of when we're going through a crisis like this.
Absolutely. Thanks, Nicole. And yeah, it certainly has been a long several days. I think I'm probably in my 13th straight hour for today of work. You know, so first and foremost is, I think, as we've been talking about, that this is not a sprint, but it's going to be a marathon. You know, this is not something that's going to go away anytime soon. It's probably going to be, you know, 5 to 10 years. You know, I think back to the 1994 earthquake, and we are still dealing with the ramifications with SB 1953 and some of the retrofits. So this will be a long, long process. So, you know, first and foremost, you mentioned the idea of physical safety. You know, we're going to be anxious to get back to our homes, to our businesses, to our communities, and we're going to want to get in there and see. And so what's going to happen is the psychological and emotional aspect sometimes clouds our judgment about the physical side of it. And as we start to enter the communities, even just driving into the communities, there are physical hazards. As we encounter those properties, as we go to salvage and see what's there, we are going to encounter those physical hazards, be it electrical lines, broken glass, sharp objects, nails, and so forth. So first and foremost is just thinking about our physical well-being. That's having adequate shoes or probably boots, because there's going to be sharp objects that are going to penetrate through boots. So hopefully something we made with a steel toe and a steel sole. We're talking about having long pants, long sleeve shirts. It's about having eye protection because our heads tend to be down and we knock into things. There are the falling hazards of things above us, trees, building structures, and so forth that we have to be mindful of. And then, of course, we've got not only the physical hazard, but we've got the biological and chemical hazards. So with COVID, we're all now well prepared by having N95 masks. That should be fine. So again, and then if you got foot protection, eye protection, some kind of respiratory protection, and coveralls, and to be mindful that you were talking about the possibility of taking things out of that site, both on our feet and our clothes. So we want to be mindful that we're not taking that stuff back to our families. So it's a matter of maybe a coverall or something like that. So
yeah,
that's how I would sort of look at it, Nicole.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel like I've actually been impressed from my vantage point in listening to coverage. It seems like when people, for the most part, are getting their evacuation orders, they are evacuating. And I'm actually incredibly proud because I feel like, you know, whether it's a hurricane, whether it's another kind of weather situation, so many times people, and it's understandable, they feel an attachment to their stuff. They worry about it. They worry about looting and sometimes don't heed that warning. But it is really, really important if people get that evacuation order that they are leaving the area, particularly with the winds. The containment is still really, really low for these fires. And there's more and more popping up by the day. I'm so grateful that the extreme winds died down for a bit, but I'm understanding that they've picked up again quite a bit, if I've heard correctly.
Yeah, they'll be back next week as well with the Santa Ana winds. You know, you understand how quickly they pick up. And we're talking about winds of, 100 miles per hour. So that's probably a Category 2 hurricane. So the situation changes dramatically. And I know we get a lot of alerts about things, and we do need to take them seriously, because if you've seen any of the Ring camera footage from these embers, it is amazing how quickly it comes. And there's no possession that is worth more than our lives and families and so forth. So,
yeah. And, you know, one of the problems, you know, we just got through the Christmas season. And so anybody who has ever had a live tree knows how they drink up water and then they stop drinking water and they get really dry and they get extremely flammable. And so if you think about California having so much brush, having so much super, you know, dry, whether it's these power lines or trees or buildings, it's just it's extremely flammable. And so it ends up being a really scary situation where an ember can create an entire new fire system. And so it's really important. I know it is advised that if you are near an evacuation zone, certainly if you're in it, grab your stuff and go. But if you're near an evacuation zone, it is worthwhile to collect some of those valuables, maybe some important documents. Sometimes people have something like a fire safe, particularly if they're used to fire season. But even if you have a fire safe, take that stuff out and put it in a bag that you can take with you, because you don't want to have to try and return to the area later. You may not be able to get to that area later to try and even retrieve a safe. And so any other tips you would have for people as they are trying to make their way to safety should they receive the evacuation order?
You know, Nicole, you brought up some great points, and it's about preparation and being thoughtful and intentional before you get to that moment, because you can't react if you're emotionally sort of drained and stressed. You're not going to think clearly. So while you have the time, go ahead and think about it. And it is going to be more about sometimes stuff that you can carry. You know, as we've seen, the roads get clogged and people are having to leave their cars behind. We saw at Sunset that the fire department just had bulldozers and just bulldozed all the cars out of the way to create the evacuation route. So we don't have the same things we had in Lahaina and in Paradise. So yeah, preparation. And also I think that, look, I hear the words Armageddon, we hear about unprecedented, we hear about these things. And look, it is at a massive scale, without a doubt. But you know, we've been through so many of these things in our 32-year history at Citadel. You know, we've seen just so much. And so it are things that we are going to get through, even though they seem overwhelming at the time. As long as we have our physical safety, everything else we can deal with.
Absolutely. There's only one you, there's only one of us. And so ultimately that's the most important, you know, invaluable thing that you can remove from the situation is yourself. And you mentioned the cars, and also I think it's worth noting in a crisis, people don't always stop to think about this, but if you're getting and evacuating your car because of a fire, please leave your keys in the car. They are having that situation where they're having to bulldoze cars out of the way because they have no way to move them. And I know that sounds very scary, but if you're already in the situation where you're like, I have to get out of this car and leave it, leave the keys so that emergency vehicles can get through, they can clear the roads, firemen and frontline workers can get where they need to be to help. And, you know, in overall, I would say I've seen, and this isn't any life lost is obviously terrible, but I've only seen a count at 11 so far, considering millions of people and towns demolished. That's pretty amazing. And so again, it goes back to evacuating when you're told to evacuate. I'm sure traffic has been a bit of a mess. Traffic's a bit of a mess anyway in LA on a good day. And so trying to get out, and would you recommend if someone is in a evacuation warning zone, they perhaps kind of think about that in terms of finding a different space, or would you encourage them to stay put?
Yeah, you know what, that's a great idea. I think maybe for the emotional well-being, a lot of people want to be there, but look, if it's overwhelming, remove yourself from the situation. And I'll tell you, even though we're not in an evacuation area or a warning right now, Michelle called me. I've been on the road for the past week. And Michelle called and said, hey, hon, what should we do? And she started gathering stuff now, right? And so that preparedness is great. You know, I think also you brought up the point about having keys in the cars. Like sometimes people feel invincible and so forth, but we have to be mindful that we do not want to put others in harm's way, like firefighters and first responders. Let's not put them in a situation where they have to make decisions to save themselves or us or what have you. Let's not impact their work by going to look and see and so forth. Let's just, you know, take ourselves out of the situation. So that means if it's easier, quicker, better now, then yeah, I think it's a great idea. Just go ahead and find that additional space.
Well, and the anybody who, you know, and that in a traffic congestion, matter of fact, just, you know, when people are bottlenecking, it can be often from those looky-loos. But beyond that, and also, and I think that the authorities have been pretty good about closing off streets. Like you can get through here if there's ongoing kind of firework going beyond this point, they're not going to let it get crowded with traffic. However, also there's a danger with the air quality you were talking about before with the N95 masks, but the smoke, you can smell the smoke. You can breathe in it. The air quality is terrible. And that is also very, very dangerous. And so it's something for people to be mindful of, that if you don't need to be outside, don't go. And certainly if it's near one of the fires, because it can change so quickly and the containment is so minimal, it's actually very, very dangerous should the wind shift to be that close to the blaze. And so just using that positive problem solving sounds like a really important and life-saving measure, not only for yourself, but like you said, for the firefighters and emergency personnel as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and looting is always a potential. And so if you're not from the neighborhood, don't put yourself in a position where, you know, law enforcement doesn't know if you should be there or shouldn't be there too. There's a lot of great resources with the AQI indexes to track air quality. There's great apps to just track where the fires are without being overwhelmed. I know I'm getting alerts constantly, so I finally had to say, okay, I'm going to mute that. So I'm probably tripping into Chris and Michelle's side here too, but sometimes just shut it down for a while.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It can be overload. I saw somebody describe it as trauma porn. And I know that might be a weird way of classifying it, but it's one of those things, like it really can have such a hard effect. And when you're already there living it in the area, you have to have a mental break, which of course we will be talking about more here in just a moment. But Lauren, thank you so much for everything you're doing. 13-hour day. I hope you're able to get some rest. We super appreciate you. And thanks for keeping us apprised of some of those physical safety tips that we can use to help manage through crises like these.
Well, thanks, Nicole. And thanks for giving me an opportunity to actually be on, I think, my first podcast with my wife. It's really an institute. So yeah, please, everyone, just, you know, be patient. We will all get through it. And, you know, we always say be safe, but absolutely, let's be safe. So thank you guys and best wishes.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Alrighty. Well, that is so important and really one of the first steps for any time we're kind of thinking about whether it's mental health or just going through any sort of crisis. We want to make sure there is that physical safety. And some of these tips may be pretty commonly known for people going through this experience. Some may not. But when it comes to the emotional weight of this distress, and how to cope when it's still an active crisis that is not letting down. And like we heard with Lauren, it's going to be many, many years in the making for recovery. How do we manage that from an emotional distress vantage point? And I'm going to take it over to Dr. Michelle Witkin over here to help speak into this and help us understand some strategies.
So I think one thing is, It's almost too hard to hear right now that it's going to be years, and I don't think that we can focus on that, right? We need to know it's a marathon, that this is going to be a while, but at the same time, we need to pay attention to what it is that we're feeling right now, right? Mm-hmm. And right now, I'm in an area that's safe, right? And Lauren mentioned that I'm also aware that we're in what's called a red flag area, and that things could change at any time, and we could go from warning to evacuation. So trying to stay sort of like in, you know, vigilant mode, but taking care of whatever it is that I'm going through and feeling right now. And I think people can be feeling all sorts of things right now.
Mm-hmm.
Most commonly, it's kind of shock, disbelief, numbness, if they've lost their homes, fear if they don't know, fear if they're evacuating. I mean, that can feel terrifying. So I think it's just important, like whatever we're at, keeping in mind, trying to be safe, being prepared, like you guys were just talking about, can help us not have to make decisions when we're overwhelmed with a lot of feelings. But I think, you know, when we're in moments where we're not unsafe, you know, and we're just feeling stuff, it's important to allow ourselves to feel it. I think sometimes we feel like we have to be brave. We have to shut it down. We can't, a lot of times adults will say, I can't let kids see what I'm feeling. It's like, it's okay to feel. I mean, if you're really seriously breaking down, like you might need to kind of step away and have somebody with you who could kind of look after you and, or just be there to support you.
Yeah.
But just really important to honor whatever it is that you're feeling in this moment, and know that these feelings are going to pass too. They're going to change. It's always changeable. Also really, really common, you know, just thinking to start to lean on some really problematic coping when we're going through this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's easy time to go reach for the alcohol, reach for some substances. It'll just like make you feel better, get rid of the feelings. It's kind of the worst time to do it. So if you can help it, stay away from it or decrease it, keep it low. We want to focus on being able to be as present as we can. Sometimes we're going to take it out on others. You know, so we want to be careful that we're owning our own feelings right now, whatever they might be.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's a really great point. And if you think about it in a time like this, and really anytime there's a natural disaster where there is a lot of wreckage and not a lot of access to clean water, when you're taking something in like substances or you're taking in extra alcohol, then that's more dehydrating. The air quality is crap and it can really increase negative factors there, but it also can set up a precedent for really becoming reliant on that kind of substance to be able to decrease or even numb out on that pain that you were talking about. And it is really, really challenging, you know, for some people, and we all know people, we all have even mutual friends that have lost their homes, and we have clients. And I think of clients I had throughout Pasadena, Altadena. I'm just sitting, I'm sick to my stomach, hoping that they made it. But not everybody has the same access to different resources. And the community, one of the silver, beautiful silver linings is the community is really coming together to try and help. There's always going to be people that take advantage of a situation. But a lot of people are trying to help. A lot of people are donating clothes if they have clothes in different sizes because people lost everything. They're opening up homes. Their local churches and community centers are trying to bring in room to create bunks and beds. I think I saw Planet Fitness was opening up gyms for showers and being able to come in and take care of yourself, have some rest. And so there's a lot of different resources in the community. And I'll just mention, I've linked a lot of them over on the blog for this episode at OCDFamilyPodcast.com. And so you can check those out. But there are a lot of resources out there too, even if you're like, I can't afford anything. There are people that, and there are spaces to go to that you can safely evacuate to. And so I think that's a really good point. Can I ask, what would you say if someone is having maybe, you know, absolutely, I'm sure so many people are feeling this way, kind of a negative bandwidth for being able to manage the distress. Maybe they've evacuated and the fire is right there. Maybe their house is already gone. Maybe someone that they care about or love is not reachable and they're worried about the worst. What are some practical tools? I know that you said, like, it is easy to take things out on others, and we want to be mindful of that. We also want to have grace for ourselves if we do accidentally kind of go off on somebody. But what are some strategies you think for just even when that nervous system is so activated? We know a lot in the OCD field, and we're going to talk about this more with Chris in a moment, but like how when we're in a state of fight, flight, or freeze, we know that thinking brain gets overtaken by that feeling brain. And so what kind of strategies might people be able to do in the short term to just, maybe they'd love to take space, but they're like, I'm in a bunk with 20 strangers because my house is gone. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, and this is, I did want to comment just really quickly on the small kindnesses that we are seeing people do. When communities go through crises like these, it is amazing to see all the little small things. It's a reminder that there are just wonderful people out there. And so I was going to say that, yeah, this may sound a little bit ridiculous because if you're in a bunk with 20, 30, 40, however many people are around, wherever you may be, right? It's kind of time to go back to basics, right? This is about survival at this point. This is about, can I get some food into me? Mm-hmm. Do I have the ability to get some sleep? Can I move my body at all, right? If I'm indoors, is there any way that I can move my body, right? It can be kind of hard to do the outdoor stuff right now. But kind of just going back to like the day-to-day, what do I do to get through, right? Because mm-hmm. we need that, right? We need that for our basic well-being. The other thing I was going to say is just trying to find any kind of a routine, right? It's really, really easy right now, really, really hard probably to find routine, and easy to end up watching the news,
yeah,
watching every alert. I mean, I've got the alerts on my phone. You probably do, Chris, too, right? They're coming in. Like, as we've been speaking, I've got updated evacuation notices coming in on my phone. And to a degree, they're necessary. Mm-hmm. But we can also get really caught up in looking at it on social media or keeping the news stations on nonstop, right? Because we feel like, I can't miss anything. And I think that what it does is it ramps that nervous system up even more.
Yeah.
Right. So stepping away from the news, stepping away from the social media, you know, have a way to get that information if you need it, but you have got to have that mental break or you're not going to be able to bring yourself down.
Yeah, that's really a great point. And I love what you said too about the routine, because it can be simple little things. You know, if you wash your face before bed, no matter where you are, just taking that moment and washing your face. If you tuck your kids in at night and read them a story, then hold on to them and read them that story. And it's not going to bring the house back. It's not going to keep it from going into a potential danger zone. But that those moments are going to be so life-giving and little bits of fuel that you're going to need to be able to continue treading water here. Because you're right, it is survival mode. And it's not just about I must get away from the fire, but it's about I have to remember what I'm living for. And that's these relationships. And that's these moments. And ultimately, even though it's devastating to lose all these things, that's what matters the most, is having each other through that. And so to the degree that you can help have some of that routine, if you can go to one of these places like Planet Fitness, I know that the convention center in Pasadena is one of the zones where people have evacuated to that have lost their homes. You know, I've been there for conferences. Walk around. You might say, well, this isn't a very interesting walk. But like you said, moving your body can make a huge difference versus just feeling crowded around your news feed, which is going to just continue to facilitate that sense of dread.
Yeah.
So really good tips. Yeah.
Yeah. And at the same time as trying to give yourself some sort of routine. Like, I love that you gave that example. Like, simply, if your routine is to wash your face, if you have access to wash your face, right, do it. At the same time as you're trying to have that routine, though, we also have to remember to ease up on the expectations that we have on ourselves right now, right? So I think that there can be an expectation that I need to keep up at my work or my schoolwork or the things that I do as a parent or a partner. And it's like, be realistic about what you can and can't do right now and give yourself a break. We will all get back to it. You will get back to it. But giving yourself that break right now is super important, and giving it to the people that you love that are around you. Or if you're not directly impacted, you know, by the fires, but you have friends or family or people you care about who are, remembering to ease up on them too. They're going to need a lot of grace and a lot, and probably even reminders to take it a little more easy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really, really good point. And something we do a lot in the therapy world is we have to remind ourselves to set realistic goals. Well, a realistic goal might be, as you were saying, back to basics. It might be, have I eaten today? Oh my gosh, I haven't eaten today. I'm going to fuel myself in that way. I'm going to make sure the kids have eaten, or my partner has eaten, or this person over here that doesn't seem to be doing very well, I'm going to make sure they've had something to eat today. And it's awful. It's awful to have yesterday been sleeping in your bed and today that being a reality. And you're allowed to grieve that. It's overwhelming. So those little small goals, like you said, are going to be so important in terms of setting those expectations and going like, okay, as much as I can preserve some of this routine, beautiful, and preserve these relationships, beautiful, but it is not going to look, and it's for a very long time not going to look like normal has been redefined. And that's something you are allowed to grieve, but also recognizing your school might not even be there, right? Your work might not even be there. And I get cold chills just even saying it, because that's the reality for many. And so just staying focused and the little goals, there's going to be a lot to do. And it doesn't all have to be done right now. So focusing on what you need to stay above water right now is really, really what we need to prioritize. Thank you, Michelle. Okay, well, with that, we're going to turn it over to Chris. And Chris, you know, one of the things that we all were talking about is something in particular for anybody joining or hearing this on the replay that isn't as familiar with OCD. We all happen to be OCD specialists. And this situation is so full of unknowns, uncertainties, and not just for the next 24 hours or the week ahead, but for significant time ahead. And that can feel absolutely debilitating for people. And so having worked in this line of work, we actually do have quite a few tools that we use, because in OCD, there is a good amount of uncertainty that brings a good amount of distress. And so in talking about that, Chris, I would love for you to share maybe some tips or some ideas to frame the situation around uncertainty and some strategies that might be helpful for folks trying to get through these crises.
Yeah, thank you for having me on, Nicole. I want to say real quick, something Michelle said that I want to highlight before I jump into your question. I think one of the things that we do a lot as people is kind of grief police and have this idea, especially if it's a parent trying to act brave in front of their kids or just trying to, you know, I got to do something. We grief police. It's like, okay, I'm only supposed to worry or stress out for this amount of time. And I would say, you know, one of the things that Michelle said that I want to highlight is just like, let yourself feel the feelings, let yourself feel the emotions, talking to clients, talking to people in my personal life that have been impacted. They're like, I have to move on. This happened to somebody else's home and it was worse. And I'm like, you are able to feel what you're feeling. It is okay to have these feelings. So I just appreciate what Michelle was saying. To answer your question, I mean, one of the things that we know in OCD is there's a lot of doubt, there's uncertainty, there's second guessing ourselves, there's mistrust in ourselves. And the thing is, in a real crisis like this, we don't always have the answers. And you know, it's not only do we not have the answers, but it's ever changing, right? We're getting new alerts. We're finding new things out. This is going on. That's going on. So in general, as people, we want to be prepared. We want to figure things out. Now, what we see in the OCD space is people are trying to figure a lot out. They want exact certainty on how the situation is going to go. And often that resorts to a lot of rumination, a lot of what I call doom scrolling, looking things up and Googling. But even people in my life who don't have OCD are doing some of those things right now because it is very uncertain. There's a lot of paying attention to like alerts and media. There's a lot of trying to figure out and outthink. And the problem is what it does is it just takes us out of kind of like the here and now of the things we can control, kind of zooms us into the future. And in that space, it's unknown and we can't control things. So one thing I tell clients when they're going through this situation and right now in a real, you know, real crisis is, you got to bring it to the here and now. What can you control? What are the things that right now you can do with the information you're given, whether you have OCD or not, right? Like with the information you're given, what are the tangible things you can take care of right now? You know, what we heard from Lauren and Michelle and their own personal family is, you know, making sure that she, you know, Michelle is packing up those really important documents and papers that they may need. I've seen a lot of different things put out. Make sure you're taking care of your pet. Make sure you're packing like your document, your credit cards, your birth certificates, your electronic laptops that may have important information. And Michelle, you know, within reasonable action is looking at updates to ensure that they're safe. And if that changes, they'll make that choice. But beyond that, right now, there's nothing that Michelle and her husband can do. And that's what we have to learn. What can you do in the here and now? What can you control? What's in front of you? And as you start to feel your imagination, your brain come up with all these what if conversations, it's bringing it back to the here and now. I will do what I can do. One thing that I think a lot of times we have to recognize is that a lot of times we have to wait for an incident to occur. If we get an alert, if something changes, then we can react. Typically, when we have uncertainty, we're trying to react to situations that may or may not occur. So that would be the first thing I'd tell people is, what can you control? Let's ground yourself in the present and focus on the tangible steps you could take now. That gives you a sense of control and a sense of action versus letting your brain just go wild and create a bunch of what if scenarios that may or may never happen. You can't fix the future if you're not there yet.
Yeah, that's a really good point, you know, and it's so hard. It's so hard to do when it's such an active situation. It's hard to do even when the rubble is somewhat settling, but particularly when it's active. And yet it's still, it's really all we can do, right? The scenarios, we could spend all the time and all the stress imagining what it could be, and it could never manifest. It could still be hard and it could go another way. And then we have zero bandwidth to be able to deal with it, right? What would you say, Chris, to people that maybe are a little further out and, of course, have to still be vigilant and cautious, but maybe even feel badly going and doing some self-care for themselves, going, oh, these people have it so bad. I should be doing something for them. I don't deserve to go and, you know, grab happy hour. I don't feel like I deserve to, you know, enjoy this. I feel like I owe a responsibility to them to keep up on all of this. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I want to first normalize that experience. It is difficult. You know, people around the globe are looking at videos and real-time footage of people losing everything that they own, watching people, you know, being interviewed, talking about how their child's school is gone or their business, or they don't have a job to go to. So it is absolutely human nature to see that and then feel guilty to go to happy hour with friends, like you said, see a movie. I know for me, you know, I had a really fun experience in my life a couple of days before everything was going on, and I felt guilty like posting stuff, and I chose not to for personal reasons. I just didn't feel it was the time or place. But my point is, like, it's a very normal experience to see other people and have sympathy or empathy for them and then feel guilty like we should be in that pain as well. So I do want to say, I want to first normalize that experience. I also think a lot of times that people, you know, I've talked to people about this and they're like, you know, I feel really guilty because I have a family member close to me that lost everything. And I was sharing that with a friend, but they lost their house. And I felt guilty even bringing up my pain that a close family member lost something because it wasn't me personally. And I've been talking to people that we can't compare pain. All pain is tough, especially in a disaster. We can all kind of equally share some stress. I do think what can help is people can support in different ways. There's been a lot of really, really good organizations putting out how, you know, there can be help and support. There's been a lot of people that are struggling just to find basic items in the Los Angeles area, such as toothpaste, you know, deodorant, clothes, just basic phone chargers. I was hearing some people saying like people don't even have phone chargers to be able to get, you know, to plug in their devices to inform their families of what's going on. And so we can definitely donate our time. We can donate our money or items to help the situation. And that can, you know, can be a supportive thing. And then finally, we all have to put our kind of oxygen mask on first. A lot of us may not be personally affected, but we have family members, we have friends, we have clients, et cetera. And if we're focusing on how guilty we feel, we're not taking care of ourselves to be able to help others. So I do want to normalize the experience. It's always tough when you witness, you know, I was thinking about in North Carolina a couple months ago when they had the horrible hurricane, Susan Boas, who's part of the foundation, the IOCDF, I felt guilty. Like that night I was going out with friends while she's like trying to save her house, right? And all we can do is offer our support. Is there anything I can do to help? But other than that, kind of bringing our own selves down isn't going to be what other people need in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really great point. And it makes a huge difference just doing what you can. You know, when you think about what a lot of people need right now, it's everything. And, you know, I will say that sometimes the decision fatigue and the just like amount of overwhelm can be hard. So if you're a friend nearby or even farther away across the country or around the world and wanting to help, and you think, but what do they need? They need everything. So if you can send money, there's lots of GoFundMes that are popping up for people that have lost their homes. If you can give Amazon gift cards, cash or Visa gift cards. I realize like with Amazon, people may not have a place or maybe kind of hop around to places till they figure out what they're doing. And so something that they can do to buy groceries, basic needs, and everything from, you know, underwear and facial cotton and things different, you know, all the way to clothes and bigger things. And so if you want to help too, a lot of people are overwhelmed and they're like, I don't know what I need. I don't even know where I'm going to be in an hour. And so anything that you can take, particularly if you look at any of these resources and where people are sheltering and evacuating to, they need a toothbrush, toothpaste, comb, clothes, everything. And so I'm sure it would be much appreciated. I've heard another area that can be really hard is medication, because people are very, very reliant on their medication and may not have access to that. And so just even being able to help support people through that process or donating to that can be really, really helpful.
Yeah. And I would say that people are really, who are really suffering, who are really struggling right now, like that's what they're going to appreciate more, you know, the reaching out, the checking in, asking if there's anything they could do, you know, do to help, or like you said, like donating things. I think often, we're human. We see people struggling. We wish we could do more. But going back to what I was saying earlier is that a lot of times we have to check in with ourselves, like what can we do in the situation? What is it? What can we control? The problem sometimes, if we spin, if we ruminate, if we loop, if we focus on things that we can't control, we're kind of using up some of our battery power. So then when things change and we can do something about it, we're so fatigued and burnt out from all that looping that we don't have the energy to then support. So we have to make sure that what we're, you know, spending our time and our mentality on are things that can genuinely help and support versus just kind of spinning, which we're, you know, we tend to do when we're in a stressful situation.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really hard. But like you said, kind of staying rooted here in the present, there's a number of different grounding exercises. Yeah. But even just kind of, again, if we're taking it back to basics, like Michelle was saying, and we're thinking, okay, I need to brush my teeth, then staying grounded might be, okay, so I'm going to source a toothbrush, I'm going to get a toothpaste. And if I didn't grab that and I'm evacuated, I'm going to maybe go to the store, or, you know, I'm going to do what I need to do. And then that's keeping you present in reality. It's helping you be able to engage in what your need is. And it is really, really hard to not then get in the hamster wheel of rumination. Another technique that we use in the OCD field, I know, is sometimes we will challenge ourselves with these non-engagement responses, where we can say something to the effect of, as much as I think about this, I'm not going to be able to know. We all want to know, but we can't. So just even telling your brain, like, I can think about it and think about it, that's not going to change it. And so maybe this will happen, maybe it won't.
Yeah. I mean, just to add on to a couple of things that you're saying, I mean, when we ruminate, we're trying to solve and fix a problem. We have the original kind of thought pop up, and then we're trying so hard to loop in our mind to come up with a solution. But often there isn't a solution to be had in the way that our brains want it. And so rumination is tough, you know, because it doesn't involve getting up and washing your hands or, you know, doing something physical. You could just be sitting there and ruminating. And so a couple things I always ask people is, first and foremost, do you feel like you're in the right headspace right now to try to figure out the answer that you're getting? If you're worked up, if you're doom scrolling, if you're freaking out, we don't want our pilots to fly a plane in that mindset. We don't want our surgeons to operate us on their mindset. You might not be in the headspace right now to try to solve and fix what you're trying to do, right? If you just found out your house fell down and you're not in the right headspace to figure things out and you're loop-de-looping, there might be a friend or a family member or somebody who's a little bit more grounded who can support you, or you might need to ground yourself, get a little bit more calm. And like you said, Nicole, get out of that feeling brain and back into the thinking brain. I also always ask people that are ruminating, you know, is there any new information? If you found yourself spinning over and over and you haven't kind of like fixed or solved the thing you're spinning on, is there new information to spin on, or are you just kind of like spinning in your own dirty bathwater? There's nothing coming out of this. We got to move on. And then finally, is it helpful? You know, is looping helpful? Have you gotten to the answers? Have you figured things out? And a lot of times the answer is no. And it's being able to let go of that compulsive rumination process. And it allows us to be more focused on the here and now. When we're in the here and now, we actually can do something. When we're kind of, you know, going out in the future tripping, getting in our imagination, kind of spinning and stuff, we can't. I love grounding techniques. I have a background in mindfulness and meditation. What makes grounding techniques so so important is getting back to our senses. That's kind of like our basics, you know? So like you were saying, brushing your teeth. I mean, that mint is going to like, you know, the smell and the taste of the mint is going to really ground you, right? Or, you know, some deep breathing, some slowing down your breath, some box breathing. So grounding techniques obviously isn't going to fix the distress that you're in or fix the problem, but it gives you an opportunity to cool down, because people need to be level-headed to be able to make those important decisions for them and their families to keep themselves safe.
Yeah. And, you know, just even a simple rule of thumb, no matter where you are, you can look around. What's one thing I see? What's one thing I smell? What's one thing I hear? What's one thing I taste? You know, and there's a lot of different ways you can do that. But, you know, being able to kind of really take in what's in the environment, what's interesting, and what I've learned even about imaginal absorption is you can't run both stories in your head. You can't literally be spinning in the dirty bathwater and really taste the mint, because your brain is like, how do I hold on to both of these? It's going to pick one, and that mint is going to be And so it is really fascinating how, as you, it's so easy to get propelled into all the things that are going to need to be learned and figured out and managed and accessed and how. If we have that mint and we're really like tasting it and we're like, is it spearmint? Is it winter mint? Is it sparkle fun mint? Because if you have kids, sparkle fun is where it's at. Then she's like, yes, Michelle's like, yeah. Then that's worth looking into. And so being able to kind of think about that, your brain literally can't hold both stories at once. So it's going to be here. It's going to be present. It's going to be able to take all of that in. And it really does make a huge difference.
Yeah. And going back to the non-engagement response, as you said, I mean, the brain wants an answer. And unfortunately, there's sometimes we just don't have the answers yet. You know, listening to Lauren and stuff and Michelle, like they were saying, everything's changing so quickly. So the example you gave, Nicole, just saying like, I really want to have the answer, but I currently don't have enough data. It may feel unsatisfactory, especially if you have OCD, but it's allowing yourself to just say like, at the moment, that's all I got. Another thought that I had is, you know, Michelle and I saw each other recently at an event, but I was talking to her afterwards. And one thing I always think about with anxiety, with OCD, with uncertainty, with the unknown, is whatever problem we have feels like a big dragon, like this huge beast. And then our mind pictures us as this little guy with like this little toothpick to fight the dragon. And I always tell people, remember, it's the opposite, right? Like the problem is going to be tough, but you have the skills, you have the tools, you have to have a little bit of trust in yourself that you will be able to manage it. Right now, it's hard to see. It is so hard for the people that are going through this tragedy, the people impacted, their loved ones, to see any kind of light out at the end of the tunnel. And it's not going to come for a while. But if you can trust that you'll be able to figure out how to navigate the uncertainty, the doubt, the distress, the discomfort, if you really start to believe that, hey, I don't know what that looks like yet, but I'm going to use and lean on my friends, my supporters, my team, the people around me that really care, I know that I'll figure out how to get through it. I don't know what that path looks like right now. I don't have all the data, but as things start to come to fruition, we will figure it out and we will land on our feet. We have to. That's the only option that we have.
Yeah, that's really good. And so as we kind of think about, you know, going through this process, particularly as parents, Michelle, I know one of the things we were going to also touch on is, and you mentioned before even that feeling of I need to be tough for my kids. They can't see me cry or upset. Like, this is upsetting. What if this is not upsetting? I mean, I don't even know what to say, right? But it can be really hard, especially when we're going through crisis, to also guide our children through the trauma and through the crisis as well. And so if we could just think about maybe some resources for parents or strategies on how we can talk with kiddos about this entire experience. For some people, they've lost their home. For some people, they're evacuated. For some people, they're just like, I can't breathe and I can't play outside and I don't understand why everyone's upset. And so what resources or tips would you have for parents helping? And I know it's going to kind of vary developmentally based on the age of the child and where they're at. But what advice would you have for them?
So I don't know if you guys noticed. Well, I'm sure you noticed I disappeared out of this. So with the winds, one of the things that's been happening is power goes out, and our power went out. So, of course, no power, no internet. Anyway, so I apologize for disappearing, but I'm back. Didn't know if I would be or not. And when I came back, you were talking about uncertainty and didn't know what was going to happen. Anyway, so talking about kids. So, yes, I think the most important thing is to answer kids' questions when they ask them.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to ask the things that they want to know about, right? So their questions are going to help parents to know how much to share, right? So, and obviously what you say to a three-year-old is going to be different than what you say to a 10-year-old and a 15-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
So if they ask, you want to, you know, tell them what's happening, give them the information that they need to know at their developmental level. And then what you also want to do is you want to make sure that you don't overgive them information.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Because sometimes once we adults get started, we don't stop, right? So that's why I said, let their questions be a guide.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to be hiding your feelings from them. But it, like I said before, if you're overly emotional, yeah, good idea to give your kids a little bit of space. But it's actually really good for them to see, I'm sad, I'm feeling anxious, etc. And here's how I'm handling it. The other thing we really need to do for kids is we need to let them know that you've got a plan and they're going to be safe. Even if you don't know what that plan is right now,
mm-hmm.
right? Kids need to know we're going to make sure that you're going to stay safe. And we are absolutely going to get through this and we're going to figure it out. So if that's all the plan that you have, that's what you want to share. But real important for them to know that.
Yeah. Kids are amazing too. They often will take that and be like, oh, great. You know, not to say that the situation is, you know, now suddenly easy, but that kind of concreteness that they can go, all right, well, I trust you and we're going to do that. And, you know, sometimes parents worry, you know, what if I'm lying? What if it does get worse? Well, you can tell them if things change in real time, things are changing in real time.
Right. Like they need to know that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
And something that we want to do is we want to be careful that we're not bringing them in on watching all the news.
Oh, yeah.
Like kids of a certain age, they might be ready to watch it. Teens, perhaps. But for younger kids, like we don't want to have the news streaming in front of them all the time. It's too much information and it can be overwhelming for them. We also don't want them to be privy to adult conversations about our fears, et cetera, right? Because, again, they don't know how to process that information. Back, you know, after the Northridge earthquake, one of the things that we saw, the kids who struggled the most were the kids who were watching a lot of stuff on TV and overhearing mm-hmm. a lot of horror stories. You know, not the ones that lived through the horror stories. The ones that lived through the scary stuff, they'd already been through it. They saw it. They knew it.
Mm-hmm.
Watching and hearing this information overload made it really challenging. So giving them the information that they ask for and then not giving them all this extra info is super important.
Yeah.
And that kind of comes to something else, which you were maybe going to ask me about, but is it okay if I drop something in?
Please.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, in terms of kids' emotions, right, we were talking about that with adults might be feeling any number of things or not. Same thing with kids. They may be just playing around like everything is normal, right? Or they could be acting up, or they could be regressing a bit, tantruming, melting down, being oppositional. And as hard, like that's so hard when you're a parent, when they're doing that kind of stuff. And as hard as that is, we have to remember that that's actually really normal for them right now. And to give them the space to be that way. Like, we are not going to be on our best behavior. You're going through stress, or you're not going to probably be on your best behavior. Your kids are not either. And so just relax. Like we talked earlier about relax expectations for yourself, relax expectations for your kids emotionally and how they're behaving. You know, obviously, we're not going to let them get into a case where they're hurting anybody or property, right? however we want to let them express what they're going through. Even if, you know, kids don't necessarily express it in words, they may act it out a little bit more.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And it can be hard. You know, I was thinking as we were listing different situations that can come up, even wedding episodes or different things where you're like, I can't handle this. You're potty trained. We shouldn't be going through this. But it's actually very common, especially as a trauma response, to have some incidents or accidents in that regard. And this is an incredibly stressful situation. And so It can be really challenging to deal with some of that. And you might go, well, this is not what I have bandwidth for. But realizing it's not about an intention, they're just trying to survive too.
And I can't imagine that any school is asking any kid to stay on top of schoolwork right now.
Right.
But there could be. And I think it's important to, you know, pay attention to what your child is feeling that they can do right now, because if they don't have the bandwidth, they don't ask them to do it right now. The most important thing is taking care of them, taking care of yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's so important. And so as we kind of get ready to wrap up here, of course, we've talked about a lot of different things. We have a lot of resources linked over on this episode's blog, where you can reach more information about shelters, services, both for people, for animals, the animal situation. This is devastating for the wildlife in the area, but there are a lot of people, again, looking at the small kindnesses where maybe they have a tractor trailer that they use to move horses and they're like, it's not great, but come bring me your horse, right? Or different areas where people are taking in different animals, different pets. And it's, you know, it's again, it's one of those just really difficult but beautiful silver linings where we get to see people are really better together. They're there to help each other. Those small kindnesses go an incredibly long way. And you know what? Like Chris was saying earlier as well, we need to also remember we need to put on our own oxygen masks and take care of ourselves as well, because it's going to take energy. And you might go, well, I don't know where that's coming from. And okay, well, from the uncertainty mindset, we might go, yeah, I don't know where that's coming from. But for right now, where that could come from is I need a cup of coffee. I'm going to go grab a cup of coffee. I'm going to make it if I'm still in my home or whatever kind of, you know, refreshing drink. Make sure you're drinking water. Do be mindful, depending on where you are. You may need to be boiling that water because of the amount of ash in the area getting into the water system. But take care of yourself and in those small ways. We can sometimes more easily have those small kindnesses for others than we can for ourselves. And we need to remember to also take care of ourselves so that we can continue to be there for everyone else. And so one day at a time, and if a day is too much, 1 hour, 1 minute, we just break it down and keep it to the present, keep it to the here and now. I think that's a really good plan. If anything, that's your plan. And that's okay. That's okay. For today, that's the plan. Would you guys have anything else that you would want to share before we wrap up today?
Yeah, I mean, just what you were saying, I think one thing that all three of us experience and see more than other people is just people that really struggle with uncertainty, with the unknown, with trusting what they do know, with trying to figure out things that they can't figure out in their head. And what I'd say is in this situation right now, there is a lot of unknown. We don't know what it's going to look like next. We still have active fires. We don't know if there's going to be more. The Santa Ana winds are kicking tonight. I have where I live right now. We're kind of in the epicenter of the Santa Anas. We have severe weather alerts popping up as we speak, right? So there's going to be things ever changing, a lot of unknowns. And so typically people want to have the answers and they want to be five steps ahead. And sometimes, like in a natural disaster, I would say it's probably one of the most times in our lives that we're not going to know what's next. And so the reason that we as clinicians always want to bring back people to the here and now is because that's where our information is, right? Like that's where we can do something about. And so when we focus on what we can control, when we break it down to small tangible steps, when we lean on our support system, that is going to be enough. We don't know what's going to happen next week or even beyond that. But if you can take it day by day, minute by minute, and really focus on what you can change, it will at least give you some sense of control, some sense of accomplishment. And that's much better than letting your head kind of run all over. Now, as I say that, it's easier said than done, you know? Yeah. So please, 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 there's self-compassion is not just two words, right? Self-compassion is a movement to say, look, I'm going to forgive myself, have compassion for myself, and be non-judgmental on myself. If I do kind of lose it, right? Everybody handles these situations differently. You may have a teen that's lashing out or shutting down. Everybody's doing the best that they can in this moment and just having an understanding for self and for others. You were talking, Michelle, it's like, you know, and Nicole is like just trying as like a family to be a team through this tough time. It's going to make it a lot easier versus a lot of infighting. So that's one thing I've been telling one of my friends who has a teen and a young kid, and she's like, we're all at each other's throat in this hotel because unfortunately they lost their home. And I was like, I know it's tough right now because even though you're an adult, this is all new to you as well. But if you can really get everybody in the room to be on the same team, it'll make this process a lot more doable if you are all on the same page versus, you know, everybody kind of lashing out. So, but just a lot of understanding, a lot of compassion for self and other.
Yeah. Yeah. And then one last thing that I was going to say, it just going from Chris's notion of there are things we don't know, I'm going to go on something that we do know, which is that in the future, that there are going to be, when the crisis is over, when the fires have died down, because they will, there will be feelings that are going to show up later. So whether you are somebody who is experiencing loss, or whether you're somebody who is supporting and caring about somebody who is going through loss, you're going to need people to support you later, or your friends are going to need you to support them later, your family is going to need you to support them later. And that is normal. And it's just important that we know that, like, it's for the long run, we're going to need to be there for each other and just be aware that we could have a whole lot of stuff going on emotionally for ourselves because the road is going to be challenging. And as humans, that's kind of how we work, right? We deal with the crisis however we deal with it in the moment. And then later, we've got other stuff we got to process. So it's important to know that.
Yeah, it's one of those things of just realizing it's going to be an evolution. The new normal is going to be an evolution. Right now, this is what it is, and the fire will die down. The swelling of emotion and overwhelm will decrease a bit, but there's still going to be different things, and that is going to be that part of the journey. And so just, I think that advice to stay present along the way, and it's okay to grieve and give yourself that compassion to grieve that this is not what normal look like. It's something that I think a lot of people that have had a loss, whether it's of a loved one, whether it was expected or unexpected, of a pet, of a home, of anything, right? And they get a Facebook memory or they get a story reminder and they're like, oh, look at this. And you're like, oh my gosh, it can feel so triggering to see that. But also I think that we can honor what we had and we can also preserve and hang on to what we have now. It's going to look different. And if you want to be angry or frustrated or upset, well, you have every damn right to be. So let yourself have that, stuffing it down and going, no, I gotta be, I don't know, beyond this, it's not going to go well. It's going to come out at some point. And so honoring that along the way, and grief is tricky like that. So it's gonna show up in big ways when we expect it. It's going to show up in ways when we don't expect it. And it's not going to show up in ways when we thought, I thought that would be a thing and I feel okay. There's just, we have to take it moment by moment and give ourselves grace and compassion when it does show up and to feel it. And like you said, Michelle, for kids too, that's going to show up in a lot of different ways. A lot of times it's going to look like fussiness and agitation and irritability. It's funny, if you're a treatment therapist, that most things marked for kids or adolescents when we're going through our diagnostic and statistical manual is like, can look like irritability in kids, right? Yeah, a lot of things can show up that way. And it looks like that for us in adults sometimes too. And so just giving ourselves that grace and compassion. But I think that's a really great reminder. Well, you guys, you've had a very long day and power off and on. You are a trooper, Michelle, that you made it back in. And, you know, go get some dinner, go eat. Thank you, everybody who has joined off and on. And I anticipate we'll be having a lot more on the replay. But if you were here with us live and all the technical difficulties, thanks for your grace. I guess that'll just be the word of the day, right, for the episode. And I appreciate both of you for taking the time and for Lauren also coming in after a really long day. Thank you.
Welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having us and doing this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, family. With that, we'll be with you again next week. But just remember, we are better together. Thank you for joining me and our OCD family community. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please like and subscribe to the OCD Family Podcast wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Did you find this content helpful? Please consider leaving a review. The more people that know they're not alone, the better. For more information regarding today's podcast, please visit OCDFamilyPodcast.com and remember to join the email list while you're there. It will provide you with the most up-to-date information, resources, and the download on the family chatter. Oh yeah, nothing says family like helping each other out, because that's what it's all about. That's right, I went there. And you can too at OCDFamilyPodcast.com. Want a recipe for success? Step one, visit OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses. Step two, click on my link to browse OCD Training School's amazing course catalog. Step three, enroll. And step four, enjoy learning. With no added cost to you, you can support the OCD family community while grabbing some continuing education or learning how to bridge yourself to self-help strategies for OCD. Again, that's OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses and use my special link to sign up today.